We can start with the questions, maybe. Om Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Om Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Pariyantam Vande Guru Paramparam Shruti Smriti Purananam Alayam Karunalayam Namami Bhagavat Pada Shankaram Loka Shankaram Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Badarayanam Sutra Bhashya Kritau Vande Bhagavantau Punav Punaha Om Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Kumaresha Suno Guhaskanda Senapate Shakti Pane Mayuradhirudha Pulindatma Jakanta Bhaktartiharin Prabhotarakare Sadarakshamam Tvam Prashantendriye Nashta Samge Vicheshte Kapodgari Vaktre Bhayot Kampigatre Prayanon Mukhe Mayanathe Tadanim Drutam Medayalo Bhavagre Guhatvam.
Buddha Swami, in a book called On Prayer, mentions or gives a definition of prayerfulness, not like as in just praying, saying praying prayers. He said that it's prayerfulness is the understanding that everything is given and awareness of the presence of the giver. Okay, he was talking about being prayerful. You know, normally when we think about being prayerful, we think of praying and all that stuff. But the way he uses the prayerfulness. Can you say something about that?
Of course, being prayerful means whatever we do like this, it's only expression of prayerfulness, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Physical expression of what you feel mentally. That is worshipfulness, actually. See, being prayerful and being worshipful mean, as an individual, naturally we are with that sense of inadequacy. When you think of what all you are blessed with, then that you will be grateful. You are blessed with a good physical body. You are blessed with good sense organs. You are blessed with good system. You have good appetite and are able to work. You are able to use your intellect, able to earn, and able to live your life. You are able to live independently. I mean, you are able to earn your livelihood. And all that you want for your life, you are given. You are blessed with. Which means you need not create, actually, you need not create the elements, you need not create the trees, you need not create anything. Everything is already given. All that you need to live your life, it is given here. And then only thing is, you use your intellect, what is given to you, which is not created by you. And you use your powers, which are given to you, you can use your powers. And you really enjoy this life. Experience this world, enjoy this life. So your life keeps going because you're able to enjoy this world. Able to enjoy this world because you're able to, you have everything. When you think about it, you will be really grateful. So for what all I need, basic things I need for my life. If 1 second if we think, can I create anything that I need to live my life? Basic thing, of basic need for us is food. And then for us, food means only vegetation, vegetarian. All the vegetables, all the, you know, that food we eat is from the plants. Either grains or leaves, it doesn't matter. So this we cannot create. It is the Mother Earth alone has to yield. And for the Mother Earth to yield this food in the form of vegetation, also there must be conducive atmosphere. So there must be sun, there must be water, there must be rains, everything. So the whole which means nothing is in our hands, or everything is there already. And then we cannot live our lives, we cannot survive without food. We know very well, simple thing. We cannot survive without oxygen, which we don't need to create. We are given. Oxygen is given, and the food that we need to, you know, it is, we are not creating anything. So, which means for us to be able to get this food and to survive, even, you know, it is the energy modified form of energy alone in the form of physical stamina and energy, because of which you are able to move around. Even our powers, all the powers are able to function because of the energy we have. Even our mind functions because of the energy. We are energetic, therefore mind thinks, intellect, mind, you know, there's thinking is possible, responding is possible, acting is possible, everything is possible, even the whole system, function of the system is possible because of the energy, because we are energetic, and for that, you know, we are functioning means we are exhausting the energy. And for exhausting the energy, you know, you have to really have energy, then exhaust the energy. That's what is life, isn't it? And for you to be alive, to keep going, to be able to exhaust energy, you must have the energy, and for which you have to get only from the food. That's why you feel hungry. And where is the food coming from? Where do you get the food from? The money we earn with our coins and notes, we can't really get the food, isn't it? How much money you have in the cupboard? If the shops don't have the food, what can we eat? You know, so our life, basic need food. Once you are physically energetic, intellectually, you know, then you can function. Then study is possible, and scientific discoveries are possible, then technology can be developed, and you can enhance an infrastructure. Everything is possible only if you have this basic thing called food. Without food, what can you achieve? Therefore, all our achievements, so-called achievements, accomplishments, are purely dependent on our food. And that food we cannot create, produce on our own. All our scientific discoveries and things may make our work easy. Now suppose before we were ploughing using the bulls in India. Now we can use tractor. Now scientific discovery can make the manual work easier, that's all. But it cannot contribute for production of grains from the soil. Which means we are at the mercy of the devatas. We are the mercy of the devatas. Earth has to yield. Sun must be there. Photosynthesis must take place. There must be no evaporation. There must be condensation. There must be rains. And we must have also forests. We must have mountains. Everything, the whole setup is there. So all these things are happening. Vana Devata, Parvata Devata, we call Devata. Every phenomenon, we call it as a Devata. Devata means illumination of consciousness or manifestation of consciousness. Everything you see is a manifestation of Bhagavan only. Consciousness. So everything you call it as a Devata. Every phenomenon you call, use the term Devata. Then Devata means you don't see anything as a mere bundle of energy. You see it as Bhagavan, which means a conscious principle. Consciousness principle is very much there in every material manifestation. That is very subtle. We don't really see. That is why in Vedic culture it is very difficult. Nothing do we see, you know, without reverence. We see everything with great reverence because everything is what? Devata. What is Devata? Any phenomenon is Devata. Why? Because everything is manifestation of consciousness, illumination of consciousness. That's the meaning. That is why each element is called Devata. Agni Devata, Vayu Devata, Prithvi Devata, Agni Devata, Akasha Devata, Vana Devata. You never say jungle, Vana Devata, Parvata Devata. And all our seeing powers is what? Devata. A seeing power, individual power is called Indriyam, and the total seeing power is called Devata. And hearing power, Indriyam, we say individual power is called Indriyam. The total power is what? Devata. The hearing power, seeing power, power of smelling, power of taste, power of touch. Each power is, totality of each power is called Devata, which is created by us here. Isn't it? Therefore, Devata, that is why this concept of Devata is very important for us to understand. Which means all we are at the mercy of these Devatas. Which means what is needed for basically needed for life, the food, and that food, for us to be able to get that food, and we are dependent on the contribution of Devatas, and they are all functioning. And all the functions are within the realm of the order. Everything is in order, therefore everything is okay, happening well. Therefore, when we think about it, really, that is when we become humble. As an individual human being, even though I am blessed with the faculty of choice and thinking, etc., I cannot really produce anything. I am at the mercy of the Devatas. Then become humble, and not only that, I feel grateful also. Grateful for their contribution. And that is when you feel grateful, I'm blessed with everything, I'm given, everything is given to me. And then that expression of your gratitude itself is what? Your expression of your humility. Isn't it? When you don't express your gratitude. So how do you express your gratitude? And through an act of offering, which is a symbolic act of offering. That is why here offering means what do you offer? Who do you offer to? How can you offer anything if you are offering to Bhagavan? When you say everything is Bhagavan, how can you offer? Who are you to offer? You yourself are Bhagavan. You yourself have no existence outside of Bhagavan. Therefore, the offerer is Bhagavan. The act of offering is Bhagavan. Whatever is offered to is Bhagavan. The one who is offered to is Bhagavan. Because all that is here is only Bhagavan. Therefore, how can you offer to Bhagavan, anything to Bhagavan? That is why we say, when you do this, when you offer something to Bhagavan, as an expression of, you know, as a token of gratitude, it's only a symbolic act of offering. And the symbolic act of offering means that act of offering actually expresses my something which is subtle in the form of a thought, that my gratefulness to Bhagavan. And when you offer to Bhagavan, it is actually my gratitude to offer, expressed to all the devatas, all the devatas. You can't separately, sun god, sun thanks, oh earth thanks. You can't thank every in separately, isn't it? When you offer your, express your gratefulness, thanks to Bhagavan, the thanksgiving actually. You know, all the devatas become thanked. You have thanked all the devatas. So this expression of gratitude through a symbolic act of offering, acknowledging the contribution of devatas, that is not little, abundance of contribution of devatas for your well-being, for you to keep going, is worship. And once you think about it, when can you, if once you are conscious of this fact, when can you not be worshipful? This fact, if this fact is understood, if you remember this fact always, you are always thankful. You're always thankful. So being really thoughtfully, being grateful to Bhagavan, acknowledging the contribution of Bhagavan and of devatas for your well-being, is in fact being worshipful. It's purely attitude, isn't it? It's not just... So whatever you do, namaskaram, do this, or you fall flat, that not an expression of your worshipfulness. Otherwise, being worshipfulness means being thankful. Really. So, being thankful to Bhagavan for what all you are blessed with is worship, isn't it? Being worshipful. Then what all you don't have? Now we come to that. Be thankful to Bhagavan for what all you are blessed with. Oh, I have this, I have this, I have this. Thanks, 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 you say. Now when you think about what all you don't have, and what all you definitely need, you desperately need, okay, and for which you make efforts to get what all you need. Anything you need desperately, you make efforts to get. But even though you make efforts to get, and definitely you need, your efforts must be accompanied by what? The grace. Without grace, your efforts will not be enough. But without efforts, you can never tap Bhagavan's grace. So efforts and grace should go together, and for you to get anything you want in time. Understand? Therefore, so appropriate efforts, prayerfully when you make appropriate efforts, then definitely you'll get whatever you want to get in this world. So prayer means praying. Prayer is for getting what you need desperately. Prayer is mainly for Bhagavan's grace, for you to be able to get whatever you need to get. Is it clear? So worshipful means being thankful for what you're all blessed with, and being prayerful means seeking Bhagavan's grace to what you need, definitely. This is what is prayer and worship. Understand? We have to, it's not just simply, it doesn't matter what you do physically. Once you understand this, you are thoughtful of this, you understand this fact, and accept this fact, and remember this fact, then this fact becomes ingrained in your understanding, then always you are worshipful. And this as prayer and worship, both happen to be actions. And they are efficacious also. Worship also, the act of worshipping will bless you with prosperity, and prayer will bless you with your fulfillment of your prayer. And here, when you say prayer also again, like how worship is, now worship is symbolic act of offering. Because you are part of Bhagavan already, you are not outside of Bhagavan. Similarly, here prayer also, who am I praying to? What is this prayer? How is it efficacious? You should not have any doubt at all. Prayers, any prayer is 100% efficacious, effective. If you are very clear about what you are praying for and why you are praying, it's 100% very clear, the prayer will be effective. Which means when you pray also, and who are you praying to? You are praying to Bhagavan. When you say you are praying to Bhagavan, who is Bhagavan? Bhagavan is the whole. If Bhagavan is the whole, and Bhagavan is inclusive of you, the one who is praying. Bhagavan, the one who is prayed to, is inclusive of the one who is praying. Therefore, when you pray, it is like praying to one's own self. That is why prayer is an auto-suggestion. Understand? And it is a will-involved auto-suggestion. Why? It is like praying to one's own self. Why it is like praying to one's own self? Because it is, you are praying to Bhagavan, the whole, who is or which is inclusive of you, the one who is praying. Therefore, it is will-involved auto-suggestion. And this prayer, thoughtfully done prayer, is an action. So, will-involved means action. Will-involved means karma. Isn't it? So, will-involved action means, therefore, this karma definitely should produce a phalam, result. Why? Any karma should produce a result, that is the law of karma. If any karma should produce a result, there is no karma which goes without producing a result. And this action, prayer also being an action, will involve action, not a suggestion, but still it's an action. Therefore, this also definitely produces the phalam. So, time spent for prayer is not waste of time. It is 100% efficacious. But when you pray, you must be very clear what you are praying for. Who do you pray to? You don't need to ask. Of course, you're praying to Bhagavan the whole. Who is inclusive of you? Okay? And law of karma works, therefore prayer works. But you must be very clear what you are praying for and why you are praying for what you are praying for. And your prayer is intense, when it is fervent prayer, and that prayer definitely will work. If it doesn't work, you can ask me. It will work. Always, most of the time, we pray helplessly. We pray because we don't know what else to do. But there's no faith. It will work or not. And we're not very clear also. Sometimes. Understand? And above all, prayer and worship will be more efficacious, really absolutely efficacious, only if your lifestyle also is governed by dharma. If the life is governed by dharma. If without living a life of dharma, merely for worshipful and prayerful means, of course, still prayer will be effective, worship will be effective. I'm not saying it is useless. A non-righteous person, if he is prayerful and worshipful, whether his prayer and worship will be effective or not. If the question comes, definitely it will have some effect. It won't be a waste of time. But it won't be as effective as the prayer and worship of the righteous person will be totally efficacious, totally effective. That is very important. Yeah. Anyway, yesterday I finished the class. Isn't it? The last part. When the mantra came, last mantra. All those last mantras were very profound mantra. The mantras are profound meaning. And wherein you see yourself as the whole. In every mantra, last mantras, you see yourself as the whole. And suppose, if this is the fact, if it is possible for a man of vision, a wise person, to see the whole cosmos as oneself, because for him there is only reality that is one's own self, and that only reality is the truth of the entire universe. Therefore he sees the whole universe as the self. And all that is that if all that is here is only one reality, then what about the divisions and differences that we see here, perceive here? That does not mean in Jnani's perception the differences are not denied. The divisions are there, differences are there. But these differences and divisions are seen by a Jnani. Now, as how the difference and divisions in the waves are seen by us. When we also see the waves, we also see the ocean. We do see the plurality of the waves. We see the differences. Oh, some waves are big, some waves are small. We see the differences. But still we are so clear. Well, how we are clear? These divisions are there. We can't say there's no division at all. There are no differences at all. Where is the difference? We can't say that. No, relatively, there are differences. Because one wave is small, one wave is big, one wave is roaring, one wave is quiet. These differences we do see. But all these differences are relatively only real. Empirically real. But absolutely, all these differences are not there at all. From the standpoint of the truth, the water, there is no difference at all. So, how do you see now? Oh, all that is here is only the water. If the wave happens to have the mind, and if it can have the knowledge, if this wave is anything and wave, and the wave can say, all that is here is myself. I am the whole, the ocean. Which means, for the wave's identity is with the water, therefore the wave can say what? No, all that is here is myself, the water. And we can say that when we see that, oh, the entire ocean is nothing but water. What about the differences? Yeah, differences are there. They are there, but they are not absolutely real. Are they unreal? No, they are not unreal. But they are empirically real, relatively real. They are as though real. Mithya. The same vision must be there for a wise person. Upanishad after Upanishad after Upanishad after Upanishad. Prakrana Grantha after Prakrana Grantha after Prakrana Grantha. Keep on listening. And our mind becomes what? Gross raw mind becomes subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler, and as you listen, your clarity enhances. Always growing clarity, enhancing clarity. And also because of your prayerfulness and worshipfulness and your commitment to Dharma, living a life of Karma Yoga, somehow when you mutualize, you manage your thoughts also. And because disciplines, you also become more focused. And when you are able to be contemplative of what you have understood and retained it through Shravanam and Mananam, and this vision really works, happens. And when that vision comes, you see this the tangibly gross, this gross tangible universe full of differences. My God, you can just say it is as though. Or can I what now? All that is here is myself. I am the whole. I am the whole. This is the expression of the vision, isn't it? That is possible. Suppose that then that vision, that is why it is not easily digestible fact for an ordinary individual to say all that is here is myself, I am the whole. To know such expression is very mind-boggling expression. And which means the mind has yet to become subtler to appreciate that fact. And which means for one needs to be contemplative all the time, dwell upon the teaching. That's why the Kaivalya Upanishad begins with that like that. No? How can one have this vision? Which means one must be all the time dwelling upon this fact. I am the whole. How I am the whole. Constantly, continuously, one must be dwelling upon this fact, I am the whole. Then this vision, this fact which you are dwelling upon becomes an unforgettable, ascertained vision. That is when you are free. But how can you dwell upon this fact that I am the whole if you have understood the fact? Without having understood this fact, I am the whole, we simply say, sit like this, I am the whole, I am the whole, I am the whole, I am the whole. If you meditate, we'll go mad. That is why it is not simply repeating a sentence. That is what people do many a time. They think, keep on saying this, focusing on that, without having understood, if mechanically repeat one sentence, I am the whole, I am the whole, I am the whole, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. It will not take any distance from where you are. Once you stop thinking about it, again you go back to the same samsara. That is why the contemplation is very different from meditation. In contemplation, you are focusing your attention on the fact which you have understood very clearly, doubtlessly. Repeatedly, you are focusing attention on the fact you have understood. Then that becomes ascertained vision, which is moksha. So, which means contemplation must be, for you to have that clear understanding of the fact, for it to be able to focus, you must have already done what? To understand, how can you understand I am the whole? How can you understand? Doubtlessly, you must have understood. You must have done shravanam and mananam. So shravanam alone will really help you arrive at this fact. You are different from, distinct from all that is here. At the same time, what? There is nothing which is not, which is nothing which is other than you. You are distinct from everything, but there is nothing which is other than you. Shravanam really blesses you with this understanding. What you are. And then when you understand that you are distinct from everything, but there's nothing other than you, you understand. And there are people who have different views also. And you repeatedly focus attention on what you've understood. and see that all others' views also, others' views should not disturb you, which means you must be very clear. It's like one Mahatma said, suppose 100 people come and call you, say, you are an idiot, you are an idiot, you are an idiot. Or no, you are a donkey. Suppose 100 people call me, then the doubt might come. Maybe I'm a donkey. Because everybody is calling me donkey. Which means you are not really. First initially, okay, you take it seriously. Don't take it seriously. Because all the people, whoever comes, you're calling you donkey. Then the doubt might come. Why? 100 people are calling by the name, say, why 100 people call me by the same name? Even the whole Jagat calls you donkey, you should know. I am not the donkey. I am a human being. That means different people may come out with their own views and perceptions, contentions. Others' views and contentions. Now you don't need to hurt their feelings by saying anything. You can keep it away. You must be very clear. How even 1,000 people call me, I'm a monkey or something. Still, I ignore the statements because 1,000 people call may be true. No, I know I am not a monkey. Therefore, you don't ignore. You don't care really. The same way, let thousands of people come with thousands of views of what Atma is, what Bhagavan is, what the world is. So many philosophers come with their own views, but your vision must be very clear. With due respect to all those people of different views, you can say, with due respect, okay, you can say, I know what I am. Okay, for that only you need mananam. So shravanam helps you, first of all, understand what all you are not aware of. When you remain totally steeped ignorance, you do not know anything. And the shravanam slowly opens up, makes you see your ignorance first. First, coming to know of one's own ignorance itself is a big achievement, isn't it? Oh, I do not know that I do not know what I am. There begins, oh, I do not know that I am searching for actually absolute peace and happiness. Yeah, really, I want all this security, artha, kama, dharma, etc. Really, really, ultimately what I want is peace and happiness. That's true. Everything you understand. Then Shastram unfolds. As unfolds, you study and definitely this becomes very clear. And you are able to see your own body, mind, sense complex being part of the objective world. It's a big thing. My God, this is part of the objective world. And where strong eye sense is sitting. It's part of the objective world. Which means there's no hold for you. Where are you? What are you then? Which means, and that is how Shastram, the Shravanam helps you to distinguish yourself and see what you are and thereby helps you understand there's nothing other than you here, ultimately. And so again, then repeatedly what you understood through Shravanam, you repeatedly reflect on what you have heard and understood and retain. And there you arrive at what? Okay, all the notions, all the views, all the contentions, you really ignore because nothing can shake your understanding. It's very clear. That is when you can say what? I have no doubt at all. The duality I perceive, the plurality I see, the multiplicity, the diversity I experience He is very much there, but it's empirically real, but absolutely there's only reality. Only reality, which alone is manifest as this whole gross material universe I'm experiencing here. Which means, and that reality is another than myself. Therefore, the whole universe is manifestation of the reality Brahma. And that reality Brahman is myself. Therefore, I am the whole. This we have clear visions. Only after Shravanam and Mananam, you can have clear, doubt-free vision. But even though your vision is very clear, you may forget it. Therefore, it has to become unforgettable, ascertained vision. I told you many times in the class, in ignorance, before Shravanam, you are ignorant. And after Shravanam, now we are during Shravanam, okay? And after Shravanam, your ignorance is resolved, you have knowledge. But that knowledge is what? Not clear knowledge, it's doubtful knowledge. So doubtful knowledge is as good as ignorance. That is why when do Shravan, people, you are attending Vedanta classes, what are you? You are still behaving the same way, they say. Attending the Vedanta class means you are making appropriate efforts. Does not mean you're healthy. You're still sick, okay? You're under treatment. Vedanta Shravanam does not make a person absolutely healthy. At least it helps you to manage your ill health. Okay, managing your ill health and you are under treatment. When can the treatment be stopped? Only when you're perfectly healthy. Isn't it? But if you stop the treatment, you will die. Okay. So you can't stop the treatment. You have to be under treatment. So Shravanam goes on. So Shravanam blesses you with the knowledge, but it's a doubtful knowledge. Why? Because it is not that easy. Because your mind is still gross and the others can come and easily shake you. Therefore, and which means you need more effort, isn't it? Therefore, when you reflect on what you have heard, understood and retained, and that all the doubts resolve, then it becomes doubt-free, clear knowledge. But doubt-free, clear knowledge also can be forgotten. Therefore, the forgotten knowledge also, forgotten knowledge also is as good as ignorance. Why? You forgot it. You don't remember. Therefore, the doubt-free, clear knowledge must become unforgettable, ascertained knowledge, for which you need Nididhyasanam. That is why Nididhyasanam is contemplation, which is meditation. Why I call it meditation? It's purely a mental activity. The body is not involved, sense organs are not involved, mind alone is involved, therefore it is mental activity. Therefore I call it meditation. Contemplation is meditation. And what are you dwelling upon? What is the object of meditation? Object of focus. What you are dwelling upon is your own swarupam. You are dwelling upon your own swarupam. Not even doing a, you are very clear about your swarupam being consciousness, reality. You just repeat this fact. Repeatedly remind yourself of the fact you have understood about the self being the Paramatma. Okay, I am the whole. Aham Purnaha. Aham Purna Atma. Aham Purnaha. That is why it is not, contemplation implies what? Just dwelling upon the already clearly understood fact about not anything else in the world, about your own self. So it is only for making it ascertained, not for anything else. Is it clear? But for you to be able to ascertain it, to be able to contemplate, to dwell upon, your mind must be free from emotional obstacles. Understand? Emotional obstacles will come. That is why, in fact, Nididhyasana itself will help you resolve the emotional obstacles. Even after having gained this jnanam, the knowledge, because you forget the knowledge because of the emotional obstacles. So contemplation helps you resolve the emotional obstacles and blesses you with ascertainment of the vision you have got through shravanam and mananam, which is moksha. Is it clear? And before that, what you do? Shravanam and mananam. And even for the shravanam and mananam to be effective, for the mananam to be effective, definitely you need to have certain mental disposition, which is otherwise called antahkarna shuddhihi, naischalyam. What do you mean by mental purity? Our mental steadiness, isn't it? All the time, the mind is imbalanced. The likes and dislikes really always, are not balanced. All the thoughts are not really managed. So that you can be relatively serene and pure. So how can I, without that, if you cannot manage your thoughts, even shravanam mananam will not work, will not be effective. That is why, for which you have to live this life, isn't it? And then this Acharya said that dispassion as the sahakari sadhanam and shravanam mananam nididhyasanam as the sakshat sadhanam. Direct means of knowledge is what? Shravanam, mananam and nididhyasanam. But what is that sahakari sadhanam? Supportive means is what? Dispassion, vairagyam. In Tamil we use the word patrinmai. And for you, if without this dispassionate mind, no, the pursuit of study or pursuit of knowledge in terms of shravanam and mananam will not be will be only a mere academic pursuit. It will not be a moksha sadhanam. Many people have been attending classes for years and years and years, because a pleasure for them. Going to the classes and listening to something, because in the class everything becomes very clear, so it is some intellectual pleasure. It becomes an academic pursuit, like going to university and getting your PhD or MA or MSc or whatever degrees you get, PhD or postdoctoral fellowship. How it's academic pursuit, isn't it? I spent so many years with the focused attention, I got this degree. See, no degree you can get easily, isn't it? You have to be focused. You focus and you work and really understand and you come out with one qualification. You have learnt it and you expressed what I have understood and you are given a certificate for that. Academic pursuit. So with Vedanta study, Shravanam and Mananam will become, even Shravanam itself become what? Academic pursuit, if it will not be a moksha sadhanam, it will not be means of liberation, it will not be means of knowledge, if there is no dispassion. Why? Because, is it clear? That is why purushartha with purushartha nischaya, with knowledge of the value of knowledge, and then dispassion, when you are doing shramanam, then it becomes a means of knowledge, means of moksha. And for one to become dispassionate, dispassion is something which one, it cannot be imposed on something. Come on, all of you become dispassionate. If I force you, and I tell you, it's the worst teacher I'll be then. Come on, be dispassionate. Become dispassionate. Don't have passion for anything. It cannot be pushed on to somebody. Can you go and sit near a banana? Come on, get ripe now. Become ripe. Can you order any fruit like that? You can't do that. It has to happen naturally. A mango or banana or any fruit, it has to become ripe naturally. You can't go and sit next to it and come on, get ready. It's like how you laugh at the same way. If I tell somebody, come on, you all have to become dispassionate. Become dispassionate. No, otherwise, you jnanam and saranam will not be effective. Become dispassionate. If I tell you, it is not right teaching. I can only say, the dispassionate minded can really benefit from shravanam and mananam. And for one to become dispassionate, one has to naturally become dispassionate, which means one has to naturally grow out of desires for things in the world. And in order to grow out of desire for things naturally, one must be intellectually sharper. An intellectually dull-witted mind person cannot discover dispassion that soon. He cannot learn from his life's experiences. See, for one to become dispassionate, one has to learn from one's own life's experiences. Life will teach enough lessons. One had to live your life for some time, and then every door has an entrance. So everyone has to go through one's own lot. If you live your life for some time, and we would have learnt. But for us, even to be able to learn from one's own life's experiences, you must be adequately sharp. And that sharpness you need to learn from your experiences, thereby to grow out of desire for things in the world, naturally become dispassionate. The only way is living a life of dharma. Okay? That is why you are compelled to live a life of dharma. Otherwise, you can never learn. 10 janmas you come back, will never learn. You will start from the scratch. This was the secret. Therefore, for anybody whoever wants to be intellectually sharper and sharper and sharper, in fact, they have to be ethical. So, not only does it contribute for intellectual sharpness, also emotional management, emotional imbalance also, it can help you manage your emotions. That's why commitment to dharma is such an important thing. And therefore, and for you to be able to live a life of dharma also, and certain attitude is important. That is why Shastram prescribes, live a life of karma yoga. Okay, therefore, living a life of karma yoga is the first sadhanam, means for having mental purity and steadiness. Relative purity and steadiness, not absolute. And mental purity and steadiness, once you have, Then what is next? Then you have this, no, Shravanam Mananam. Shravanam is for knowledge. And Mananam is for clarification of doubts or clear knowledge. Knowledge and clear knowledge. And Nididhyasanam is for unforgettable, ascertained knowledge. This is the order. Okay? And Karma Yoga lifestyle definitely involves what? The attitude. So the way of life. And which is applicable for people of any life, any time, any place. Because when you, as a Karma Yogi, when you live your life, when you do anything you do, I mean, you do your duties first. Which means you become very clear about your duties and you perform your duties. In doing your duties, in playing different roles, as an individual, you play different roles, not one role. In playing all your roles, and in doing, you have to do many actions. In doing everything, you have proper attitude. I'm doing my duties, and I'm in this role play, I'm doing this as my duty, and I'm doing all that I'm doing, ultimately, to live this life. And I'm living this life, ultimately, to discover moksha. If this is very clear, then your actions become offered to Bhagavan. There's no way of offering your actions to Bhagavan. I offer all my actions to the Lord. How? By simply doing namaskaram? Or by simply saying it? No. It may be very clear. I'm doing all that I need to do. I need to do, isn't it? I need to brush, I need to bathe, I need to have shower, I need to cook, I need to eat, and for which I need to earn, I need to buy, for which I need to earn. So I need to do all these things. I need to do. So that I maintain myself, myself, isn't it? So maintenance is very important, isn't it? You can't be a parasite. Nor can you be a mere consumer. You must be a contributor. Therefore you do. So when you do, or you are very clear about your duties and you do your duties and you play different roles as even the one individual, but your role plays you play are many. And playing all your roles, you only perform actions. And how do you perform your actions? I'm doing this because I need to do this to live my life. And then I'm living this life for moksha, which means I have a great purpose of this life. I'm not simply here. I'm not a vagabond just to waste, while away my time and go back. Every fraction of second in my life is very, very precious time. We don't know, our span of life is so precious. Every minute is very precious time. That is why how we spend our time is very important. We can be relaxed, at the same time, you do it, isn't it? And then what you need to accomplish cannot be grabbed by anybody. And nobody is on your way to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Nobody can stop you. Nobody can prevent you from accomplishing what you want to accomplish. It is always available. What you want to accomplish is readily available. All that you need to do is you need to just take it. You have to take ownership of what you really, are searching for. Therefore, but for that, you need to do all these sadhanas are involved in between. That is why that when your attitude is there, your actions become offered to Bhagavan. That is what is said to be Ishwararpana Buddhya Karma Karanam. And also, and in all your actions, when you do also, definitely our likes and dislikes will come and compel you, impel you to do actions. So whether my all the actions I'm doing are impelled, or am I doing them under the compulsion of my own likes and dislikes, my own whims and fancies, or I'm doing it, you know, in conformity with my knowledge of right and wrong. No, I am naturally blessed with the knowledge of right and wrong. Therefore, I know what is right and what is wrong. So my actions I do are in conformity with my knowledge of right and wrong, or are they, you know, compelled by my own whims and fancies? No, definitely. As a person, karma yogi, my actions, which means I use my will. I use my will. I never abuse my will. I don't misuse, abuse my will. I use my will. I use my will means what? My actions are always governed by my knowledge of right and wrong. My actions, whether I like it or not, my actions are not compelled by my, dictated by my likes and dislikes, my ragadveshas. Which means my will becomes continuously surrendered to dharma. Will is surrendered to dharma. Yeah, total law and order. Because you know, there's no choice here for you. Understand? You don't choose. Should I do this or that? You choose among the, what is right. There you choose. Brother, should the right or wrong? There you have no choice. Only right I do. Unknowingly, unintentionally, inevitably, because ignorance I may do wrong. But knowingly, I try to avoid doing wrong things. Because I'm conscious of dharma. I know the value of dharma. I know the greater value of what I'm going to lose by not following dharma. Isn't it? Therefore, I think of the it's the longest project. Therefore, I become very conscious. So my life becomes completely governed by dharma. As a karma yogi, the life is completely governed by dharma. Because karma yogi's will is ever surrendered to dharma. For surrendering one's will to dharma is surrendering one's will to Bhagavan. And surrendering one's will to Bhagavan is what? Being close to Bhagavan. Why? Surrendering one's will to Bhagavan means actually living in harmony with universal natural law and order. Living in tune with the order. Niyati oda isai pada vaazhudhal. Living in tune with the order is in fact being close to Bhagavan. And being close to Bhagavan is what? Being capable of tapping Bhagavan's grace. How to tap Bhagavan's grace? Reservoir of grace blocked. Big pipeline is there, but blocked. What is it which is blocking Bhagavan's grace from flowing towards me? Bhagavan's grace should flow towards me all the time. Abundantly it should flow. Grace is always there. But I am not able to tap Bhagavan's grace because it is blocked. What is it blocking? My lack of commitment to dharma. That is why it is all order. It is all within the realm of law and order. You can tap you can tap Bhagavan's grace abundantly. And for which all that you need to do is you need to be close to Bhagavan. Being close to Bhagavan means what? You have to live in tune with the universal law and order. And that is possible only if your will is surrendered to Bhagavan. Which means you are committed, totally committed to live a life of dharma. All your actions are governed by your knowledge of right and wrong. They are not governed, dictated by your own likes and dislikes. That is very important thing in Karma Yoga. Then we call you, we say, you are ethical person, isn't it? And not only that, so this attitude in performing actions, and there is commitment to dharma, then whatever comes in life also is what? Prasada. Therefore, I am able to see anything which comes in life with the sameness of mind. See, remaining balanced. It is again another mind-boggling thing. How later on in jnanam, to see all that is here is myself. I am the whole. That fact, when Shastram tells, you are the whole, and you understand, my God, am I the whole? It is something not easily digestible fact for you. Similarly, when Shastram says, now see, whatever comes in life, remain the same in all situations. In pain and pleasure, remain the same. In loss and gain, remain the same. In victory and defeat, remain the same. Success and failure, remain the same. Cold and heat, remain the same. Now, the life is full of pairs of opposites. Dvandvaha. How to remain the same in all the situations? You can remain equanimous in all situations if you see every situation as gift from Bhagavan, Bhagavan's prasada. Very difficult. Again, here again, you are not mechanically simply advised to see everything as Bhagavan's prasadam and thereby you can remain the same. No. How to see it as Bhagavan's prasadam? Important factor is whatever we go through in life, the present situations are experienced as though the results of the present actions. Really speaking, the present situations which we go through are the results of our past unexhausted results of our past actions. And the present actions, the present life is only instrumental nimittam for those fruits to surface. That is why we always say we do not have say over these situations. They are unchangeable, uncontrollable, unpredictable also. We do not know. But horoscopes and all can help you. What can the astrologers do? They can predict. So sometimes our situations are predictable but still uncontrollable. Even the astrologer tells you by knowing it beforehand, what are you going to achieve? They are uncontrollable, unchangeable. Is it clear? Why? Because they are all determined by the law of nature. So natural laws alone determine the situations that you go through. And they're determined as what? As the fruits of your own actions of the past life. And for them, because the results take their own time to fructify. And exactly when exactly you have to go through that particular situation that comes. That is why you can't understand why this comes now. Why it did not happen before. Why should it come later on? It comes exactly when it has to come. Because that is the time of fructification. Again, it's within the realm of law and order. Why this happened only at this age? Why only in 50? Why only in 45? Why only when... My God, I wish I knew this when I was very young. You know? People always say, I wish it happened. But always things happen. Now, only when... that's a time of fructification. So it can be desirable, it can be undesirable. It can be enjoyable, it can be hateable, whatever it is. Why? That whatever karma, in keeping with the karma, punyam or papam, what is in store? In keeping with punya papam, you have accumulated as a result of your actions, you go through the situations. Isn't it? And this is determined by law, dharma, law and order. Why it determines that is? That is how the order works. Why pain comes? Pain determined by what? Law. Natural law. Why pleasure? Why success? Why failure? Why defeat? Why victory? Why honor? Why dishonor? My God, I tell you, it's all determined. Predetermined. By the... That's determined by the order. Once you understand, it's natural laws determine my situations. Therefore, they are unpredictable. Even if they are predictable, they are uncontrollable. The hidden variables. Unchangeable. But one good thing about them is, they are not permanent. They keep, you know, going. Agama apayinaha anityaha. They come and go, they are impermanent. This is an important fact we need to remember. Whatever comes in life, there cannot be something without the cause. No, without a seed, there cannot be a sprout. Therefore, whatever comes, there is an appropriate cause for that. And that cause is what? Not the present situation, not the present people I'm associating with, not the present things that I'm enjoying, not the present actions I'm involved in. They all only nimittam. They become instrumental for this world results to manifest. This is the important thing. That is why if it is everything that I go through in life is law determined, law ordained, all the laws which determine the situations are all Bhagavan. Is it? Nothing exists outside of Bhagavan. All that is here is Ishvara, Paramatma. When you say, what about these laws which determine results of actions? They are also Paramatma only. Therefore, if you see each law, we don't see the laws through physical eyes, but we do very well understand the natural laws being manifest and which alone determine the fruits of actions. Therefore, I can now see as what? Each law which determines the fruit of action, my situation, is Bhagavan's hands. That is why Bhagavan is said to be Karma Phala Data. Karma phala data means bestower of fruits of actions. Why? One remaining in the form of law and order, remaining in the form of the natural laws, who determines the fruits of actions, determines all the situations that one has to go through, is Bhagavan. That is why we say, you know, everything is, that's a law-determined situation is Lord-determined situation. This is a fact we have to remember. Then we can see the situations as prasada. If it is prasada, then we can try to remain the same. We won't complain. No, in Hindu, the temples when we go, I don't know whether you have been to the temples, and there you go and you get prasad. No, when you offer, before anything that you take from to the temple offer, we call coconut, banana, incense sticks and camphor, etc. We say bitter leaves, lemon, or fruits, etc. But when the priest brings it, offer it to the Bhagavan, in sanctum sanctorum, offers it to the altar, and he brings it back, whatever is he brings in, we give only one name, prasada. We don't separately say all those things, coconut leaf. It can be a leaf, bilva leaf, a small flower, or some chandan, or some kumkum, or basma, vibhuti. Whatever comes, you know, sometimes the flower will fall, immediately all ladies will jump, run to take it. You know, really. That time people don't see it as a simple flower. You see all the beautiful roses on the roadside, no woman will run. Even if they want it, they like it, still they won't run. But a small petal falls somewhere in the temple, they'll run. You can see all the women together to run together. I'll go and take it. Know why? Prasada. It will look funny. Oh my God, for these flowers, people are going like this. Not because they run, because prasada. I should not miss Bhagavan's prasadam. I'm ready to accept whatever comes prasadam. People will, no, you can see this, especially all the crowd goes and that is my crowd. It's not a problem, sorry. Mentally, it's a prasada buddhi. You know, I want, I don't want to miss prasadam. This is the readiness to accept prasada. Understand? After comes, yeah, it's okay. Prasadam, it marks. No. They're already readiness to accept prasada. Now you're eagerly waiting for prasada. What is going to bring in, bring outside from inside, you know, leaf or flower or fruit, whatever comes, prasada. It is very important. So whatever comes, pain comes, pleasure comes, sweet comes, something sweet you get, something bitter you get, water you get, everything is prasada. Why? Determined by Bhagavan in the form of order. This is a fact. This is not cock and bull story. This is a fact. All the actions are producing results. All the result, definitely the result follows the action. And those results are determined by the natural laws. Laws are Bhagavan. Therefore, law-ordained results are Bhagavan-ordained, Lord-ordained results. Therefore, whatever comes is a gift from Bhagavan, prasada. And unfortunately, whatever comes, pleasure also does not remain for long. Pain also does not remain for long. There is the nature of dvandvas, pairs of opposites. Everything keeps going. Everything is time-bound. Then we say, pairs of opposites are time-bound. Anityaha, they come and go quickly. And prasada buddhi, when you see, okay, which means I am live for a person of purushartha nischaya, who is definite about what his ultimate end is. I am living this life ultimately to discover fullness, happiness as my own sarupam. You know, which is nobody can prevent me from accomplishing it. But I had to, it is my Isn't it? All I need to know, I need to take ownership of it. And for me to know, who is stopping me from knowing? My own, you know, lack of preparedness. So I had to become prepared. So I'm living this life for what now? I'm living this life of dharma, prayerfully, worshipfully, with the proper attitude of, you know, of offering everything to Bhagavan. Why? Because ultimately for that only. To prepare myself means for such a person of clarity about his end being moksha, these situations which come and go with the prasada buddhi, and he can easily remain the same. No? It is very, because remaining the same, equanimity in all situations is a very important thing, which is the most difficult thing. Understand? And remain the same, it will help. And even after understanding this fact also, knowing the nature of the pains and dvandvas, pairs of opposites, that they come and go, they're all prasadam, determined by the Lord in the form of laws. Therefore, I can see them as prasadam and accept with sameness of mind. In spite of knowing all these things also, you know, you may be weak, you may not have enough strength to have that attitude, isn't it? To be able to digest, to remain the same, you know, in spite of knowing the fact also. If you know the fact, you can manage, but still you're not strong enough. That is when you had to be prayerful. You know, O Lord, please bless me with the knowledge of what I can change, what I cannot. And bless me with the knowledge and strength to change what I can prudently, intelligently. To accept gracefully what I cannot. You need to seek Bhagavan's grace here again. See, every small step, wherever you find things, you know, difficult, you have to, it's very important for you to have, to tap, to be prayerful, to seek help. Seeking help means intelligently one should seek help. Seek help intelligently, which means, no, you seek help intelligently means be prayerful. And exactly ask for this, oh Lord, please, because you are very clear now, what prayer is, how prayer is efficacious. Therefore, you know what is, where you find your helplessness. I understand all these things. I know situations come and go. No pain is permanent. No pleasure is permanent. Nothing is permanent. All the pairs of opposites come and go. We know very well. But still, when situations, the undesirable situations come, I'm not able to really take them. And I do understand they're all determined by Bhagavan in the name of law and order, natural laws, in conformity with my own past karma. Therefore, they're unpredictable. And if they're predictable, they're unalterable. They're not changeable. I had no way. I had no say over the fruits. I had to live, go through them. So and then, because it's all prasadam only, I can understand it's all prasadam. It's all prasadam. I, in spite of knowing all these things, I somehow am not able to remain the same. I'm shattered emotionally when undesirable situation happens. How to remain, no, how not to be shattered? Whatever comes, I must be strong, you know. How to remain the same in all situations, and for which definitely you need Bhagavan's grace, for which you have, one has to be highly prayerful. We have to seek Bhagavan's grace. And in fervently, every day it must be the prayer. It must be an everyday prayer. Oh Lord, please help, bless me with the knowledge of what I can change, what I cannot. And please bless me with the knowledge and strength to change what I can, to accept gracefully what I cannot. This is a prayer, okay? So three aspects really will help you to manage the situations. So you don't get really, you won't be stagnant there, you know? You will keep progressing. You will overcome all situations without becoming insane. Without going mad, somehow you manage. That's for managing. But still you are tapping Bhagavan's grace. This is what living a life with an attitude of accepting everything with sameness of mind as prasada. It's called prasada buddhya svikaranam. Prasada buddhya karanam, prasada buddhya svikaranam. When I do it with an attitude of offering, but when I receive, I accept it with an attitude of prasada. And whatever it is, I never compromise with dharma for anything, because my will is surrendered to dharma, which is Bhagavan again. That is how I live my life in harmony with the universal law and order, in tune with the order. Therefore, I am close to Bhagavan. This is the only way you can really tap Bhagavan's grace. That is why for the whole thing, living a life of karma yoga means you are living a worshipful, prayerful life. Whatever you do becomes worship, and whatever, you know, all the whole life is life actually offered to Bhagavan. The whole life becomes offered to Bhagavan if you live this life, because conscious of dharma, very alert, highly prayerful and intelligently prayerful, worshipful. And you understand how you take situations, how you do your things. This is the way of life. Then you Bhagavan's grace will bless you with adequate, you know, strength. I mean, you will be blessed with tremendous amount of strength, emotional strength. You will view things correctly. Your perception will be okay, right. With these attitudes, no, will help you see situations. No, you understand everything correctly. So you can accommodate. Once understanding is there, you can accommodate. Okay, and in due course of time, this is how you can maintain your mental serenity. Then you can be focused. Then you are pure also. That's why this lifestyle should go hand in hand with your study of Shastram. Shravanam. Okay, just do Shravanam. Living a life karma yoga, because Shravanam is for you to be able to live a life karma yoga. And also for understanding. It should go together. Then you will be prepared for mananam. Then nididhyasanam, you need not make any effort at all. That is why nididhyasanam is not that you have to really work very hard to be nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam will become easy. That is the essence of the last two verses. And wherein, I didn't text today, I just hurried, you know. He mentions about the Rudra, Shirudra Prashna. So what he says, see, what is that which comes and really obstructs, stays as obstacles? Why obstacles are there? See, even though you're very clear about the end, you know, the means, you're committed to everything, part of knowledge, still why obstacles come in life? Why obstacles? You know, it's all, any obstacle is called pratibandha, is actually caused by your own papa, your own, the results of your own wrong actions of the previous lives. And what are all the wrong actions? He mentions a few of them. Yesterday I told you what all the wrong actions. And the one mention is there, kritya akrityat putaha bhavati. If you are regularly prayerful, worshipful, living a life of dharma, as a karma yogi, with the proper attitude. You perform your actions and your proper attitude, you accept situations, then you become what? You become purified. Purified of, you become cleansed of the sins. And the sins caused by what? Caused by commission of, you would have committed things, actions, and which should not have been done. The commissions and omissions. Kritya means commission. Akritya means omissions. So you would have done whatever you have done. What doing, what you should not have done, what one should not do is what? Commissions. If avoiding what you should be doing is what? Omission. The commissions and omissions results in what? Papam. Just, that's what obstacles come. And also stealing. Papam. No, not knowingly. We didn't know some, what, when, how and all that. So many things. Therefore, doesn't matter whatever papam you have. All our obstacles are caused by what? The results of our own past wrong actions, papa karmas. And how are you going to neutralize them? Only by living a life of karma yoga. What choice do you have? No choice. Have Ishwarpana buddhihi in doing actions. Understand what it means by saying having Ishwarpana buddhihi. So be clear about the end. Be clear about the means to accomplish the end. Be committed to the pursuit of that end. Then understand the means being only means for accomplishing the knowledge being Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. And for which you must be dispassionate. And for that dispassion, for me to discover dispassion, I need to mentally pure, become pure and steady, for which I need to live a life of karma yoga. This is the teaching of essence of the teaching. Essence of the teaching of the Kaivalya Upanishad. And actually the last verses. And there is a thing I told you, many things, important things. This is the content, this is what is revealed by the last explanation for the last two mantras. Last two, yesterday hurried, isn't it? This is what you're supposed to understand as the meaning of the last two mantras. Once you live a life of karma yoga, then you will definitely become mentally pure and steady, and you'll be able to become dispassionate. Then Shravanam and Mananam will be effective, and effortlessly you will be contemplative. Thereby you will have the jnanam, and that jnanam alone will free you from bondage of samsara. This is the meaning of the last mantra. Finished. Is it clear?
Yes.
I finished my class, and then Narmada wants to say something. You can say something. Whoever wants to say, you can say something. Yeah, we said then I want to conclude with small japam, okay? Because we all came and everything went well smoothly, and really, we said, our